Mr. Martin, Reel 2. We were talking about the day war broke out, and yes. The priest had just told you after you came out of church.
On the altar, during the service, he came on, he was going to give a sermon, and before he started the sermon, he said, "I have to tell you that war has just been declared at 11 o'clock today." And from then he carried on with his sermon. Well, I recall him. We planned to get married in 1942, actually. And when war was declared, I thought, well, I should be involved, no doubt, before too long. And we then brought the wedding forward until 1940, actually. We got married in February 40. Our work at the time, as I say, we were doing all this government work. It was routine, all these blackouts, building after building. We fitted well, we didn't fit them, we made them. They went out onto the site and built, and the workmen there fitted them. Plotting tables, cabinets, you name it, we did it. The pillboxes, we had.
Now, tell me about the pillboxes.
Yes, well, we had plans sent to us for various sizes of pillboxes. We made the formwork for them. And that had to be done. They had to be set out on the floor. We had a massive great floor. We drew it out on the floor. And then we built the formwork so that that could be put together, assembled on site, and then filled with concrete. With a splayed hole for the compost and all that sort of thing. And we had a number of these so that we could build them, and they were then taken out onto the site.
So they were a mould?
Sort of mould, yes. They'd pour the concrete in with the reinforcement rods, and they were built on the site and then moved to another site if the same situation occurred, that they wanted the same size pillbox. There were two or three different sizes. We had the plan sent to us and we simply made the form there. While we were there, it was rather interesting because, as I said, there was an airport there. They were building planes, and as war started, I thought we were likely to get one or two bombers over. Well, in the middle of our operations one day, suddenly there was anti-aircraft fire, and I moved out. And I was in the Home Guard in those days, and we did a bit of aircraft recognition. I looked out and I thought, heaven help us, they're firing at British planes. There were about four Hamptons flying round. Now, you can't mistake these, they've got a thin-tailed boom, it was a peculiar-looking thing. There were four of them flying round, and the anti-aircraft shells were bursting near them. I thought, great Scott, you talk about friendly fire. Fortunately, they didn't hit any, but they made a few holes in the fabric of the planes, I'm afraid, and they came down and landed at Spig Airport. But thankfully, nobody would end up like that. Well, the gunners can't recognise British planes, heaven help us. There were about four of them, I could recognise the thing.
Now, had you had any bomb raids before you joined there? You joined the Home Guard, presumably?
Home Guard as soon as it was the LDV which started.
That'd be June 1940. Right. Now, had anything much happened before then? Had there been any changes in what you were doing at work?
Other than the fact that I joined the Home Guard as well, so I was working in the day and I worked most of the night very often on patrol.
Now, let's look at the Home Guard then. So you joined when it was the LDV. How did you actually go about joining and why?
It was known as the Luke, Duck and Vanish. Well, I wanted to do something. I was working in the day on government work, but I wanted to be in the defence services if it was at all possible. And I thought, well, the best thing to do is join the Home Guard. There was a base not very far from home, which I joined.
Where was it at?
That was at Alton. I volunteered, and it was at Alton Police Station, and I went in to put my name down. And our base was a place called Dugdale Road. We had an unoccupied house, that was our headquarters, and we operated from there. There was a bridge just down the road.
Was your unit called anything other than the LDV or the Home Guard? Was it a battalion or company?
It was a battalion, but I can't think of the name of it. I haven't a clue. Lieutenant Holland was our officer in charge.
And how many of you were there?
Now that is again a good question. There'd be a platoon of about 20. I became a lance corporal. I'd have about 10 men under me.
Now, taking it from the start, what was your first uniform? Would you get any uniform when you joined?
I had no uniform, an armband. man was in uniform. We had no rifles either. So if Germans had invaded, they didn't have a walk over. We had nothing. Then one or two rifles appeared. Then the uniform arrived. And this was going back over the period, about 6 months or more. Then
what kind of training did you do with them?
Well, drilling to begin with, ordinary square bashing. There's nothing wrong with that, in that you learn to obey orders quickly. That's the important thing. You obey orders. We were then part of our interior training, tactics, lying and creeping and crawling and that sort of thing, the use of smoke and flank movements. We were taught these by the textbook rather than anything else. You see, we were working in the daytime, we had night time only, and it was all right in summer time if we were out in the field, but it wasn't much good at night. Weekends, yes, we went out at weekends, and then there was a range at place called Alkar, near Southport, a rifle range. Suddenly a load of what known as Ross rifles arrived from Canada. These were the 303s, but they were rather longer than the ordinary rifles. And the party of us who were considered to be good shots, we went out with these rifles to the rifle range and we tested every rifle. A, to see how accurate they were, and B, to see if there were any faults among them. They were very good, accurate rifles. It would have been heavier than the Lee Enfield. I found one that had got a hair trigger. He had only got to touch it, and the thing went off. So that was put on one side, because normally service rifles, you have two pressures, probably not. First pressure, and then you take a second pressure. This one, you touch it, and it went. So that was thrown out. The rest were all right. They were very good and quite accurate rifles. We then had rifles, and we got our uniform. We then did the marching displays, and of course, we were on night duty. We had patrol areas. There was a railway bridge not far away from us, and we had to have people on duty on that, or by the bridge, in case of any paratroop landing or anything like that. Nobody at that time knew what would happen, but we had to be there. Bombers came over, of course, and occasionally when they dropped landmines, if they didn't go off, we were used to block off streets and escort people away from houses from the landmines. And that was another job we had. If they dropped fire bombs, we would then be called out to help, again, block off streets and prevent traffic going along, and help with any people who might be wandering around. These were the little jobs that we had to do as part of the Home Guard, apart from being ready for any action, should there be any. Oh, yes, another thing, the German plane did come over while I was at Speed, and it dropped a few bombs near the airport. And there was a Czech fighter squadron with Hurricanes at Speed Airport, but I've never seen any go up so quickly. They almost went straight up in the air, this squadron of fighters. They were Czech pilots. He got as far as the Wirral, and that was as far as he got. He got him down. I don't know whether it was a Dornier or what, but there was just one plane on his own, and he didn't get back. But night was the main bombing time for Liverpool.
What was the bombing like, as far as you were concerned?
It was quite horrendous at times. To be in an area where incendiaries dropped, because I was at home one night, I wasn't on duty, I was at home.
In Garston?
No, it happened where I was staying with my wife.
Sorry, yes.
We were married then. And these planes came over, and we heard, our brother-in-law and I went outside to see where the planes were, and we heard them come over, and then we heard a rushing sound as though water was tumbling through the sky, and it was all the incendiary bombs coming down, with the whistle of the tails, and none actually dropped round us. But there were some further away, and of course they started, and the fire engines came out, and the fire service and all the rest of it. And when the high explosion dropped, of course, that was quite a feature. The none again dropped around us. They were aiming for the docks and the industrial area of North Liverpool. They did drop a few parachute mines. We had one not very far from where my mother and father lived. It dropped in a front garden, and it just looked as though it was a piece of sculpture. St- standing in the front of the house, and it didn't go off. Well, of course, everybody was evacuated from down there, and they took the parachute off it, and the bomb disposal team came along and made it safe, and then put it in the rest of it. I haven't got my camera, otherwise I've got a picture of it. But that was one of the main features. But I remember going to the cinema with my wife one night, and we were just coming out of the cinema in the silence then, and we walked on through an air raid. Fortunately, as I say, it was concentrated on the northern part of the city. Although they did, if they wanted to get rid of bombs, they'd drop them anywhere, and some did come round and about. But we got home safely without any problem. As far as that goes, the Home Guard, yes, I found it very useful in that I became a weapons instructor.
Now, well, let's take a look. How long was it before you got promoted to Lance Corporal?
Oh, I suppose about 9 months, probably. About 9 months.
And what about this weapons instructor business? How did they train you?
Well, it was rather simple training, actually. The only weapons we had were the rifles to begin with, and I had a flair, I suppose, for weapons. I was a good shot. I could take it apart, clean it, instruct others in how to use it, using the sights and so on. And we then got, I think it was a Browning semi-automatic. It was gas-fired, and we fired one shot, it reloaded itself for another shot with an automatic magazine. And this was quite a feature. It was the only sort of weapon, rapid fire that we got. And this I was given the job of mastering it with a book of instructions and then teaching others how to use it. And that was as far as we got before I went to the army. And we had nothing else in the way of heavy caliber machinery at all. They came after I got.
What about things like hand grenades, bayonet training, things like that?
Well, we did a bit of bayonet training, yes, when we got the rifles and bayonets. We had bayonet training, and we had chaps in the local drill hall who came to teach us. That was on the weekends.
What was the nature of bayonet training? Or was it that battle?
Well, they simply had sacks hanging up, and you'd charge this thing and shout it and say, you know, get at it, and thump, and that was it. And if it sticks in, fire, and that would blow it off, you see. That was the attitude. There wasn't a great deal other than that. Hand grenades, yes, we were taught hand grenades. We were shown them, how to prime them and how to use them. They also told us that the sticky bombs would be coming along, and these you had to run and stick on the side of a tank. With the best of the British, of course, because tanks weren't very pleasant when that sort of thing happened, and they made sure you didn't get too close to them. So, these things were, should we say, mentioned, but we didn't see anything in the way of a sticky bomb or anything like that. They certainly didn't come in my time with the Home Guard. We were shown how to make Molotov cocktails.
How did you do that?
You had a bottle with you filled with petrol. You put paper in the end and made sure it was tight, bung the thing up, and the petrol you left. When you threw it, you ignited the paper and just tossed it. Make sure it was burning when you threw it. And the crash of the glass on the tank or whatever it was would make sure the petrol ignited. That was what we were instructed to do. I can't ever remember that we had any instruction. We had some bottles ready in case there was an invasion. But they would have been rather dangerous to have had light around, I think, though. So we decided not to have those. Hand grenades, we didn't have any ready primed. They were there, available if we wanted them. If you fired a round, then there was a court of inquiry as to where the round had gone and why. We had on this bridge at night, one night, a very young chap, he was about 18, I think, or 17, he just joined, and he was put on duty on the bridge. And I think he was a bit nervous, quite frankly. He heard somebody rustling up in the bushes because the bridge went over the top, the road went underneath, and then two embankments on each side above a high wall. And he heard rustling in the trees and the bushes above, and he fired a round into the trees. Fortunately, when Gordon got in the trees, I think it was just a cat, I think. Well, of course, everybody then got to have a court of inquiry as to where the round had gone. Fortunately, we had a few more rounds, but we didn't have very many, I might add, until things got a little bit better. They got supplied, bear in mind, that they short in those days. And that was about the some story of the Home Guard days. We didn't have much equipment, certainly while I was there.
Now, how long were you with them? From June 1940 to when, would you say?
July, to the time I went to the army, which was the 19th of March, 1942.
So you were with them a good while.
I was with them a good while, yes.
Now, what about being called up? What do you remember of the process that you went through?
Well, I was first of all called for a medical at a centre in Liverpool, in Merthyr Street, I had to go to. And you were examined by a doctor, of course. You waited in your turn, doctor examined you, and you were then notified sometime later, a few days later, as to whether you had passed or failed. I passed A1, no problems. And that, a note to say that I would be called up at some date in the future when the need arrived. I carried on with my work in the meantime. And then...
There was no question of you being counted as reserved occupation then, was it?
Yes, there was, yes. Because I tried, first of all, to go into the Guards, because I realised I would be going. And I thought, well, am I going to wait to be sent to some unit, or do I take my choice and volunteer first? So I tried first of all the Guards, which happily I wasn't accepted for, because when I saw the Guard recruiting sergeant, he said, what are you doing? I told him what I was doing. I haven't got an earthly chance, manager. You stay where you are, we can't take you. We'd be in trouble if we took you from that job. Well, the next thing, I saw an ad in the paper that they wanted builders and people with building experience for aerodrome laying overseas with the Royal Engineers. Thought, well, now that might stand me in good stead. I'll try that. So I went to see the chap that gave me the recruiting depot, and I went to the chap there, and I said I wanted to volunteer for the aerodrome building project. He said, how old are you? I was about 26 or something, 24 or something like that. Oh, oh, you're far too young, you are. See, we want men over 40 for that job. Maybe that's not you. He said, what about the spearhead of the attack, the Royal Armoured Corps? Oh, I said, no, I'm not too keen, thank you very much. I said, I'll stick with my present job for the time being. About a fortnight later, I got a call-up paper for the Royal Armoured Corps.
How did you feel about that?
Didn't worry me one little bit. I thought, well, here goes. If the Royal Armoured Corps are going to have me, I'm going to the Royal Armoured Corps, and that's it. And I was sent my call-up papers, enlistment papers, to a report to the men in barracks, Catterick Camp, on the 19th of March, 1942. And that's where I duly turned up.
Now, what? How did they take you into the army? You know, your reception when you got to Catterick. Because, you know, you go in there as a civilian.
A rookie, yes. Well, we were picked up from the station, and we were hustled into a truck, of course, and then taken into the barrack square where we dismantled. And we were then, names were all called out, name you did as you were told, Martin, you go in that troop there, Brown, you go over there, and so on. You were into squads, they were. And you were then taken to barracks, and you were given your room where you would be staying, sleeping. And then the next thing was, having got, I think we went to the naffy and had a cup of tea. That was another thing. You were shown where the naffy was, and you were given a sergeant who was going to be in charge of you.
Now, were you in a unit? I mean, I know you're the Royal Armoured Corps and yes, men in barracks, but did you have a training regiment number you can recall?
153. I think it was a 153 training regiment. I think it was. Or was it 53rd? I can't remember. I probably have it somewhere. I'll try and look it up tomorrow. But I think it was either 153 or the 53rd Training Regiment. I'm pretty certain it was. Royal Army Corps, Captain Camp.
And you got a sergeant?
I got a sergeant, yes. Little chap, dark chap. Can't remember his name for the moment. I can see it in his face. Little chap. I will remember his name. It'll come to me. I forget some of his name. But he was our sergeant. And he was with us all the time. He was responsible for us. And of course he told us where we were, showed us our room, and he had a room at the end, all the rest of it. He took us to the napping, we had a cup of tea, and he took us back to the right, get uniform now, let's go off, so we went off in uniform.
And how did they kick you out?
Well, they looked at you and said, oh yes, try that. If it went somewhere near you, that was fair enough. And if you were at standard size, you did fairly well. But if you're a little bit odd, then of course it would heaven help you. But in the main, mine fitted reasonably well. But it was rather funny actually, because the uniforms were brand new and they'd been, I think, dusted with an anti-louse powder or something like that. They were sort of whitish. And the sleeves were so creased you couldn't bend your arm. You know, you were like this. You see, trouser leg, you don't have creases down there. And I'd been in the army 3 days, I think it was. And you had a break in the morning for a coffee or to the nap for a cup of tea. And I dashed out from my billet. Walking along was an officer, smart as could be. Here goes, I'll show him how to salute. Gave him a whacking salute. Sam Brown, immaculate, all the rest of it. Arm was halfway up and I realised he was a regimental sergeant, maybe that was salute. So I thought, here goes, there'll be trouble now. So I thought, I'm going through with it. Gave him a smacking salute. Walked past him and said, I've got away with it. And I, not likely, trooper! Come here! So, went back. Sir, how long have you been in the army? Well, you could see from my uniform, I'd only been in a couple of days. 3 days, sir. Oh, why did you salute me? I saw him coming along, sir. You were really smart in your uniform. Your Sam Brown was polished. You had a stick. You were dressed just like an officer. And I thought, for a moment, you were an officer. As I was halfway to salute, I realised you were the regimental sergeant major. I'm sorry, sir. Well, that's quite all right, considering you've only been in a few days. Quite all right. May I offer you one point of advice? I said, sir. He said, you saluted me because you didn't check first. He said, your powers of observation were just lacking a little bit. He said, take my word for advice. Sharpen your powers of observation and you might live a little bit longer when you get into action. I said, thank you, sir, I will. He was very polite, he was very pleasant, and he gave me words of advice that I always remembered for my days after that, there's no doubt about it. He was perfectly right. But you see, in those days, the RSM did wear a collar and tie. He had a button-up neck, but he didn't look smart. And I learned afterwards that that was one of his tricks to go round, to see if soldiers would spot that he was RSM and not an officer. I learned that later from one of the other sergeants, actually, not my own sergeant. But other than that, yes, I wasn't quite there.
Now, what was your barrack room like? Can you remember?
Pretty Spartan. And I've been trying to think, but you know, I can't really think. I think we were slept on the floor on palliasses. I don't think we had beds. I'm sure we haven't got beds. I think we were on palliasses on the floor. Because
was it an old-fashioned barracks, or was it a hut?
It was a hut. It was a hut with the ablutions and the rest of it. Privacy was one of the last things that was considered. And I think we moved later into a back room, but I saw some stuff on the floor. And there were chaps from all over the country, of course. It was a very mixed bag, there's no doubt about it.
How did you get on with it, with your fellow recruits?
Oh, I got on quite well with them, really. They were all beginners like myself. None of them were. There was only one chap who had been. He came in later. He was an ex-army chap who had been a regular. He came in later. But the chaps who were first in were all new like myself. We got on quite well. There were one or two what I would call the wide characters. They had a bit of a experience in the world outside. If you watched Dad's Army, remember Walker? Well, it was a bit like Walker, some of them. But there was one lad who was from Yorkshire, from Lancashire, but he was right on the border. Nobody could understand a word he said. He got a mixture of Yorkshire and Lancashire accent. His name was Thistlethwaite. But he was a pleasant character. He really was. And it was difficult to understand him. And then another chap who got a coke, a smoker's cough. He kept us awake all night. But in the main, they were a good crowd.
Any bullying?
No, I never found any bullying at all. No. I didn't find anything like that. There were no problems in that sense.
And what about your sergeant? You know, this chap who was with you all the time. What was he like? How did you get on with him? And how?
Sergeant Morley. Morley, his name was Morley. Sergeant Morley. Yes, we got on quite well with him. He was very strict. He was no nonsense. He called you all the names under the sun. Would have been in, well, after compensation and stress counselling, I'm afraid. He really did throw it at us. He really did. But he got us licked into shape, there's no doubt about it. And there was no fooling around. He'd been injured. He'd gone over the edge of a cliff in a tank and been injured. And he was downgraded, of course. And he was given the job of training recruits. But he was good, no doubt about it. He looked after us, and he drilled us. We had a tough time, let's face it. But at least we were being trained for what we got to do.
I'd like to look at a typical day's training. I know you won't remember a single day, but just the sort of things that would happen. How would the morning start there?
The valley. They're about 6 o'clock or something like that, on an earthly hour. And then we get up and we dash off for breakfast. And the breakfast.
That's what I was going to say. Army food.
Army food. They seem to have a never-ending supply of liver, which you could have sold your shoes with. That was breakfast. Occasionally, we got a bit of bacon, which was very nice. But liver seemed to be the most readily available food, which I wasn't very impressed by myself. And then we go out, sometimes on keep fit, strip for keep fit. Irrespective of weather. And then we go back.
Were you fit? You were a cyclist there often quite a bit.
I was reasonably fit, yes.
What sort of PT was it? Was it any good to you, would you say?
Well, it was a standard PT, a standard stride, and you'd hop together and arms swinging round and over your head horizontally, arms to the front. And then you would do exercise, and you used run, of course, 100 yards as fast as you could. Then after that you get hot, you go back and have a towel down and out in your clothes on parade, and you do a square boxing.
Now what about drill? You'd done drill before.
I done drill in the
How did you take to it?
I enjoyed drill, quite enjoyed it.
What did you like about it?
Well, I could march, I enjoyed the exercise of marching. You could feel your body warming up when you did the exercising, especially you got a pack on. And it was quite good fun. I quite enjoyed that. And another thing that was a bit amusing in a way, you would be called out to drill the squad. And the sergeant was quite crafty in some respects. He'd pick out somebody he thought would make a hash of it, you see. And they did very often. It was a complete shambles. They gave it a hold on the wrong foot. And everybody sort of stumbled. Or turn them out on the wrong foot, and some of them didn't know left from right. And these are the things that happened, you see.